Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
From the author of the New York Times bestseller Swamplandia, a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, comes a new collection of stories that showcases Karen Russell's gifts at their best. When Swamplandia was published in 2001, critics from coast to coast fell in love with Karen Russell. With a new story collection, it's more of the same. She is one of today's most celebrated and vital writers, honored in the New Yorker's list of 20 best writers under the age of 40. The new book is Vampires in the Lemon Grove, that is published by Knopf, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Karen Russell back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight.
Oh, thanks for having me, Joe.
You know, when Swamplandia came out, we were, all of us who read it early on, we're so excited about it. And then it proved to be very successful. And what has, since that time, what has it been like for you to have that book under your belt? Is it a relief, or is it also mounting pressure of, oh, okay, now what else does she have in her?
Right. I mean, I was happy to kind of get to do these short stories, you know, because that I do think that there was definitely some pressure, but I think the stories, they're sort of so different, you know, and the collection is pretty eclectic. That felt, after living inside that swamp for most of my 20s, you know, that felt really liberating. I do think that there's some pressure now, but I also feel like the stuff that I'm writing is so kind of whacked out that it's always going to be on the margins a little bit. I don't know, that might be my own perception, but there's something liberating about that too, to be writing in sort of like in a weird swamp of the mind.
So when it
and I think the relief, I mean, you said relief, and that every day I'm still elated that Swamplandia made it out of my brain into the world. That was a difficult birth, so.
With each story, do you have that feeling? I mean, that now there's a pride in each one individually, or does it come as a group, as a collection?
With this new collection, I thought they actually were really cousins to one another. You know, a lot of them are about monstrous metamorphoses or really sort of violent transitions, but kind of in different centuries and wearing different skins. You know, more so, I think there's a little more variety in that sense, you know, in terms of kind of style and time period, than my first collection, the St. Lucie's Home for Girls Raised by Wolves. So they come individually, but it's funny. I mean, there are some stories we left out of this collection because they didn't feel, you know, thematically connected enough to the ones that we included. So it's just interesting. You know, I was saying it's kind of like blood to a cut. You sort of learn what your preoccupations as a writer are. Oftentimes I'll think I'm writing a story that's such a, you know, so totally out there or so disconnected from the ones that preceded it. And then once again, it will end up being about, you know, kind of lost or, you know, sort of the same theme. I'm like, oh no, you know, it's sort of like that B-horror movie where the taxi driver turns around and he's the killer. You think you're escaping your narrow set of preoccupations, but there they are again. So.
Is there a surprise when you look at the flap of the book and it's talking about your stories and it sums it up in a sentence and says, a community of girls, one of the stories, a community of girls held captive in a silk factory slowly transmute into human silkworms, spinning delicate threads from their own bellies and escape by seizing the means of production for their own revolutionary ends. I'm assuming you don't enter into a story planning that.
It's just in the Betty Crocker recipe book. I just thumbed through it. I was like, I'll make this one about those silkworm monsters that ends up being, turn into some kind of Marxist butterflies. No, and it is so disorienting to read the capsule descriptions because they sound quite mad, you know? I mean, they just sound insane. So there is some kind of funny dislocation, I think, you know, in seeing what the stories must appear to, you know, to outside readers, how they're reading. And I also think that's just always a problem for any writer of anything. When you have to paraphrase out what you're writing about, when somebody, some kind, well-meaning person says, oh, what's your novel about? You say, you know, it's set during Meiji era Japan and all these girls drink a tea that converts them into human silkworms. Everybody runs for the bar. Nobody, you know, it's tough to put into words, but, you know, what the emotional kind of, in quotes, about of the story might be. you know, which in that case was sort of these, it's based on historical fact, you know, about these young tenant farmers who are sort of duped into leaving their homes to real silk for the emperor during this time of rapid industrialization. And the terrible, you know, the way that they were converted into their functions, you know, the workers got converted into their functions and into factory machinery. So even though it sounds on the surface probably like a Cronenberg nightmare, for me it's an exaggeration, but it's a way to tell the story of something that really did happen, you know, to these real women.
To me, your great skill and your great talent and why these are all so enjoyable is how you make a premise like that so initially and throughout, but certainly to get us in to get us hooked, to get us involved, so accessible.
Well, I'm glad that it is. I mean, that's been something reassuring and exciting about, like, the book tour is meeting readers who you think would run screaming from a story like that who found some way in. You know, and that's amazing to me. People that I might not have seen as the demographic for some of these stories, you know,
right.
Older men, my third grade teacher who came to one of the readings who I was sure would write me off forever as some kind of devil worshiper or something. But
Do I fall into the older man category, by the way, Karen?
Did I misread that? I've met Joe. Joe is a young, vibrant
okay.
man.
Okay, I was just checking.
Like Joe, for example, I didn't know he knew how to read. I was surprised that he was able to make it through. Lots of big vocabulary.
Right. Yeah.
No, I mean, in seriousness, I think that means that if they work at all, there is something kind of universal contained inside them. I mean, I love sort of Kafka or George Saunders or these really whacked out people who have found a different register to tell a story that is absolutely universal, you know, about what's unbearable about life on this planet or, you know, the worst parts of our nature, the best and the worst.
You mentioned George Saunders, and we had him on the show recently, and he was saying, and mentioned you by name, and saying it, you know, it's great that stories are being consumed and are being respected now, and it's wonderful to be in that company with you and a few others who are able to, it's sort of a power punch where you say, well, here are like four or five really good collections and show you what stories have to offer.
Wow, see, I just swooned. Now the rest of this interview is just silent because I swooned and died of joy that he would mention me by name. I mean, he's a real hero of mine. And it is an amazing moment. I mean, Juno Diaz and Alice Munro had these fantastic collections.
Right.
Sam Lipstadt is a writer I love. I've heard great things about Jess Walter, Jim Gavin. So it's a Robin Black. So there are all these sort of exciting story writers who are doing completely diverse things. You know, it's a real spectrum of sort of more realist traditional stories. And then, you know, somebody like George writing Escape from Spiderhead, you know, about pharma hell, you know, pharmaceutical hell where they're testing on prisoners in some kind of funny, Beckettian hilarity space. I think it's an exciting moment. I just think that it's a really elastic form. So much is possible, and you can do things in that form that you might not be able to sustain for a 300-page novel. You know, I wrote this one in the new collection about presidents who are reincarnated in the bodies of horses. Nobody needs that to be like a Tolstoy, you know. No one needs that to be the length of War and Peace. You could take these risks that might work for 12 pages but would exhaust a reader, you know, at length.
And in talking to George Saunders, I mean, one of the things that came up was the notion that whenever someone sets down to write a short story, that they're always searching for a novel. Were you ever
right.
tempted in this regard?
Sort of that. Readers or writers? When writers
well, for you, were you ever tempted in the writing of any of these to say, yeah, you know, I could inflate this. This could work.
No, well, that was, remember, because my whole trajectory with Swamplandia was, I made this honeymoon, starry-eyed commitment to a short story, Ava Russell's The Alligator, that became that novel. But I would say that was my old man in the sea. That was like my trying to land the Marlin sort of battle. And what was wonderful about these stories is in every case I finished the story and felt like that was the end of that dramatic arc. You know, like vampires, we had a good run. I'll never see you again. Now, like, live your undead life in this storybook, and good luck to you. you know, but I didn't have that sensation that it was going to sort of wanted to become something more, you know.
With the, and this is sort of into that Junot Diaz realm where he has seen success in both stories and in novels. So is there pressure upon you that perhaps is within the publishing world, within an audience, and even personally where you say, well, I still want the next novel to come?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, I do think that there's some pressure. And I think that it's wonderful that people are reading more story collections because traditionally, you know, the logic of the industry says that, oh, these are a tough sell and, you know, collections are sort of a sunk cost. We'll take them, but we really want a novel. And I don't think that every story writer is a natural novelist or vice versa, you know. And in my case, I sort of feel unnatural at both things. You know, it's just awkward, sort of awkward in different ways at both things. It might be the grass is always greener, Joe, because when I was writing Swamplandia, I couldn't wait to write stories again. And now I'm sort of in this new phase where I just want a stable, committed relationship to the single world of a novel, you know? So I had been working. I think the last time we spoke, I sort of had this glimmer of an idea for a novel set during the Dust Bowl drought. So that's what I'm sort of stoically returning to. But hopefully, I pray to God one day I'm on the show to talk about a new novel. You know, I hope that comes to be.
Whatever the work is, I hope you return to the show. You're always a delight. The new book is Vampires in the Lemon Grove. It is published by Knopf and Karen Russell. I wish you all the luck in the world. Thank you so much for being with us and enjoy your great success.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's a pleasure always.
A delight. Thank you very much. Again, the name of Karen Russell's latest is Vampires in the Lemon Grove. It's published by Knopf. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.